This is Teresa Trent, and you are listening to Books to the Ceiling, a podcast that features excerpts from new mysteries coming on to the market. Today, we're going back to Brian Silverman's St. Pierre Caribbean Mystery Series to the second book, Calypso Blue. Our excerpt is not on the Caribbean island of St. Pierre, but with a maintenance worker in New York City. He came to the Big Apple for a better life, but finds his faith tested. Here's a little more about the book. In Calypso Blue, Brian Silverman crafts a gripping tale of mystery, revenge, and redemption, set against the backdrop of New York and the Caribbean. The novel follows John St. John, a man torn between his faith, past, and responsibilities as a father, as he grapples with a life-altering decision driven by a desire for justice. As his story unfolds in the shadow of a significant historical event, another narrative emerges, one centered on Leonard Benfiglio, an American expatriate running a bar on the island of St. Pierre. When a legendary calypso singer, Lord Ram, dies under suspicious circumstances, Leonard is reluctantly pulled into an investigation at the behest of the island's police superintendent. Blending elements of crime, culture, and a personal reckoning, Calypso Blue explores themes of loss, second chances, and the ghosts of the past that refuse to be forgotten. With vivid storytelling and rich atmospheric detail, Silverman transports readers into a world where music, memory, and mystery intertwine. Now here is an excerpt from Calypso Blue. Preface. A. Dreamland 2001. John St. John was up early. It had stormed the night before, and that didn't help his sleep any. Earlier that day, he visited a man on Gravesend Avenue, a man whom a colleague put him in contact with. It took almost 10 days to get it. But now, the man had what St. John requested, what St. John wanted. He had his gun. That night, he tossed and turned, thinking about what must be done the next day. He kept the gun in a small black plastic bag, the kind you get at a bodega when buying a can of beer. St. John didn't like guns. When he preached at the Faith Palace Baptist Church on Union Street, a Sunday side job he cherished, he railed against the gun violence that plagued the streets of Brooklyn, and now he was a hypocrite. But he was also only a man and a father, and as such had to do what a man, what a father, had to do to protect his family. That was what he kept telling himself as the storm raged both inside and in his head that night. The morning was clear, and unusual for early September, there was a slight hint of fall in the air. He put on his maintenance department uniform and slipped the black plastic bag into the canvas backpack he carried to work every day. Before leaving, he went into the bedroom where his daughters slept. He kissed them both, 11-year-old Jacinda and 14-year-old Miriam. His wife had already left the house working to care for an elderly woman who lived in Brooklyn Heights. With their parents' busy schedules, the two girls learned to fend for themselves. They were good girls. He thought about their half-brother who lived on the little island where St. John was from. The boy was almost 20 now. His mother could not control him. He was often in trouble. He had a bad disposition, a quick temper. St. John regretted every day that he was not there to guide the boy spiritually and morally. But it was a choice he made when he left the island for New York. When he fell in love with another, it was something he had to live with. He hovered over Miriam, staring at the calm in her face as she slept. He hoped that when she woke, that calm would remain, that she would in time lose the frightened, tormented gaze that had occupied her face since that day on Eastern Parkway. But he didn't think so. He was worried about her, and that was why he had to take care of this thing. He couldn't let what happened to her stand without retribution. She had to see that her father loved and cared for her, and would die for her if necessary. The 3 train, even at 6 in the morning, was crowded, but he was fortunate to get a seat. He clasped his arms around his broad chest, hugging the backpack tight to him. He could feel the sharpness of the gun in it. It was as if it were radiating heat. He had the earphones of his portable cassette player plugged into his ears. He was listening to the sweet voice of Marcia Griffiths. She was singing that beautiful song about Dreamland. He needed to hear her voice to help settle him, to calm him for the day ahead. He got off at Fulton Street and walked across to the North Tower where he worked. He knew that the financial offices on the top floors were already busy working the overseas markets. On his way in, he saw Stanley Clement coming out of the tower, his shift finished. Clement was short and rotund, with very dark skin and a hairless head. The two acknowledged each other. Clement, originally from the Caribbean island of St. Kitts, lived on Lincoln Place, also in Brooklyn. "Rained hard last night," Clement said to St. John. St. John nodded. "Beautiful day today." "It is," Clement said, staring up at the blue sky and then into St. John's face. "My friend, get you what you need?" He nodded again, but said nothing. He didn't tell Clement why he needed the gun. He didn't tell anyone what happened to Miriam and who did it to her, not even his wife. They would know soon enough. He wanted all his people to know. "A pity we need such things in this country," Clement said with a shake of his head. "Quiet day for you, I think. I see you at church tomorrow evening."
"Yes, sir, and thank you."
Clement nodded and shuffled down Fulton Street from where St. John had come. St. John went into the maintenance entrance to the North Tower and took the service elevator down to the basement where he had a locker. He put the backpack in his locker and double-checked to make sure he spun his combination lock to secure it. He glanced at the work assignment board in the adjoining maintenance staff lunchroom. He saw he had to go check a water leak in the kitchen of the law offices on the 16th floor. As he rode the elevator up, he thought about his decision to keep his daughters and his wife in New York. Now he knew he made a mistake. He should have already sent them all to the island, where he would soon join them. He had thought there would be more opportunities in New York than on his tiny island. But there was evil, promiscuity, and bad boys with guns. But that just confused him more, because the irony was that the gun he had in his locker was not to be used on a bad boy with a gun from New York. It was to be used on a man from the island. His island. Evil was everywhere. He knew that from his biblical studies. But the island where he was raised was different. Or so he thought. He made his decision. His wife and the girls would move as soon as possible while it was still early in their school year. He had already told his sister that they were coming. She was now making the living arrangements for them. There was much more to do. After a quick inspection, he discovered that a gasket was loose under the commissary kitchen sink on the 16th floor. He tightened it and checked to make sure a new washer or bolt was not needed. Then he felt the floor shake violently under him. He pulled out from under the sink. "Earthquake?" a young woman asked him as she poured herself a cup of coffee.
"Certainly feel so," St. John said. "This building's steady, though. No worry here about a little New York earthquake."
She smiled at him and took her coffee back to her desk. The small walkie-talkie he carried on his belt was beeping. He picked it up. "St. John," he said into it while he listened to the squawk coming from his supervisor, telling him to check on some fire damage on the 91st floor. He sighed. Clement said it was going to be a quiet day. He didn't think so. And he was actually glad of that. It would keep his mind off what he had to do after work. There were people huddled in groups and talking quietly as he walked through the office to the elevator bank. The elevator seemed slower than normal, but finally arrived and was empty, which was unusual for the morning. It was rush hour. Usually the elevators were packed. He tried to think if it was maybe a Jewish holiday and that was why it was quiet. He wasn't sure. As the elevator ascended rapidly, he thought he should call his son on the island. He should alert him that his half-sisters and stepmother were moving there. The boy's mother was dead. He had no family there. Now he would have a family. He would have people who cared for him. He hoped that would soften him and the dull rage that seemed to consume the boy. That Marcia Griffiths song was in his head, Dreamland. He thought for sure that it was written about the island where he was born, the place where he hoped to soon return. He was humming to himself as he rode the elevator up. The elevator stopped on the 91st floor and the door opened.
Just as St. John was about to step out, thick metallic smoke streamed into the elevator and immediately filled his lungs, knocking him onto his hands and knees. Before he lost consciousness, his mind went to the image of his daughter, Miriam, her costume torn, her hair disheveled, wandering Eastern Parkway late into the night of Labor Day. Then he realized that the gun in his locker would never be used. There would be no retribution. "My babies," he whispered faintly, before the hot, thick smoke melted his lungs. And that was an excerpt from Calypso Blue. Calypso Blue is available at Amazon and Goodreads, and I will be leaving links to those online retailers in the notes for this podcast. Now here's a little more about our author. Brian Silverman's writing career has spanned over 30 years. He has written about travel, food, and sports for publications including The New York Times, Savoir, Caribbean Travel and Life, Islands, The New Yorker, New York, and others. From 2004 through 2013, he was the author of the annual Frommaer's New York City Guidebook Series. He co-authored the acclaimed 20th Century Treasury of Sports with his father, Al Silverman. His short fiction has appeared in numerous publications, including Mystery Tribune, Down and Out Magazine, and Mystery Weekly. His stories have been selected to appear in the Best American Mystery Stories in 2018 and 2019, and the Best American Mystery and Suspense Stories 2021. His other short fiction has appeared in publications such as Down and Out Magazine, Mystery Magazine, Dark Waters, and Vautrin. Freedom Drop is his first published novel. And as I said, today we had Calypso Blue. He lives in Harlem, New York with his wife, Heather, and his sons, Lewis and Russell. You can catch up with Brian Silverman at his website at www.briansilvermanwrites.com. That's all we have this week on Books to the Ceiling. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to rate, review, follow, or share with friends who enjoy mysteries. Books to the Ceiling is a part of my author blog at teresatrent.blog, where you can find an archive of all of the podcasts. And don't forget to check out the giveaway page for your chance at gift cards and ebooks. Thank you so much for stopping by, and I hope to see you again next week with a new mystery on Books to the Ceiling.